Hello, everyone. This is Ashley Pfeiffer
and Ariel Brooks Stevens,
and you're listening to At the Closing Table with Ariel and Ashley. We're coming to you on Reggae Rocks Kendall County, and we will be with you the first Saturday of every month from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you've missed an episode, they are always available on the Reggae Rocks Kendall County app under podcasts. You can also contact us on Facebook under At the Closing Table, or you can email us.
It's at closingtable@gmail.com and at closingtable on Instagram.
Perfect.
Yes. We're not as active on social media as we should be, but we're going to get there.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? One step at a time. It's baby steps.
That's right.
Baby steps.
That is right. There's a lot going on.
Yeah. So how are things?
You know, things are busy and messy, and that's life, I think. And this month has been tough.
Yes, it has.
Really, really tough.
This has been a hard month for everybody in the Hill Country.
Yeah.
So,
I know Ashley and I have talked a couple times. My family was directly impacted by the floods, and just seeing, everybody keeps saying seeing the devastation, but I don't think it's really kind of hard to quantify and put into words what it looks like now, but certainly what it looked like on July 5th.
Yeah.
But I will say, as hard as it is to explain how destructive or destructed everything looks, man, the outpouring of support, it is remarkable.
Yes.
It is absolutely remarkable. And hearing from first responders, I mean, I know the day after, I mean, people came by, do you need socks? Do you need water? They fed us. They,
yeah.
You know, cleaning out my aunt's house was pretty emotional. And then just to know everybody was just there to be helpful, even people that had lost everything.
Right.
My neighbors were helping neighbors. I talked to somebody recently who's here from another state with their cadaver dog. And she goes, I'm just overwhelmed by everything that we saw, but I am so overwhelmed with y'all, with Texas, and how everybody banded together and just how amazing it is. And I think that's probably a good way to sum it up.
Yeah.
It's just been everybody's so helpful. And, you know, yes, we've all heard about the scams. The scammers claiming to be from FEMA and don't give your money here and don't give your money there.
But you're always going to have the bad people.
Always. And what is it? Mr. Rogers tells the story about when he saw bad things on TV and his mom always said, look for the helpers.
Right.
It makes it so easy. And we have organizations like Hill Country Family Services. We have Hill Country Daily Bread. The Community Foundation of the Hill Country raised $60 million and is giving away 98% of it. They need to have some money to pay their staff and whatnot. Samaritan's Purse. I can't tell you how amazing they were, because we were ill-equipped to clean up sludge and raw sewage that had seeped into the house after the floods. And they said, nope, we got it. We'll take care of it. It was just, it was remarkable. So, you know, my aunt and my cousin lost everything, but they're still here. So we can make it right.
That's exactly right. Well, I think you're right about everybody banding together. And that's really, you know, everything that I've heard, you know, I mean, and that makes your heart happy that everybody's banding together. So,
yes. And I mean, we, from a real estate perspective, we know some houses were on the market and now they're destroyed. And some people had to change a lot of different plans.
Yeah.
But
surprisingly, I've had some phone calls about, you know, some houses that they had listing agreements on, or, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
A couple, I mean, literally one that was washed away,
mm-hmm.
you know, so there is no house there to purchase.
Right.
You know, and then some other ones that, you know, just they're still standing, but that's about all that can be said, you know, and so I mean, it's just, it's heart-wrenching. That's all there is to it. It's heart-wrenching.
Yes. So thank you to everybody that has lent support, whether it's your time, your donations, your prayers, because I think it's definitely felt out there.
Yeah.
Keep it
Absolutely.
Coming.
Absolutely.
So on that note, I mean, how's college? Well, I think we mentioned last week that, as ironic as it is, Ashley and I both have children going to the same university.
It is crazy.
It is kind of crazy.
Yeah. So far, so good.
Yeah.
He hadn't left yet, so we'll see. Let's talk next month.
Mine's ready.
Yeah. Yeah, I think mine is too.
I think mine may have been ready for a year.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. We'll talk about that next month.
Oh, gosh.
Right? The actual move-in?
Yes. Once we've done with move-in,
yep.
We might be drinking wine during that podcast.
Okay, so what all are we going to talk about today?
Well, you and I had talked about ownership, general ownership. I think this time of year is the time when, I mean, we've all heard it, where somebody goes on vacation and I love it here and I'm buying property and I'm going to buy property with my sister and my brother and my 7 cousins so we can make this work. So I think just talking about the different types of ownership and some of the things to think about, because there's a lot of different ways that you can buy property and how that flushes out if you're not a married couple buying the property as your main residence.
Right.
Also, we're seeing a lot of investors, multifamily housing has become very, very, it's always been lucrative, but it's maybe hasn't always been super popular, but it is pretty popular right now. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's just a little bit more available multifamily housing to be purchased. Yeah, we're seeing that quite a bit.
I think that's true.
Yeah.
You know, going back to people going on vacation and wanting to buy houses and all that. So I actually had that phone call, right? So I had somebody that I know, you know, that's kind of a friend of mine. And so they had gone down to the coast and they were, you know, they had done an Airbnb and it so happened that the one next to them was available. And so there was an open house and they went and looked. And so they called and they're like, look, and this goes back to several of our other podcasts about the fact that, you know, in a depressed market, people in general figure out how to do whatever it is they want to do, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so during COVID, I would have never had the phone call, hey, I want to buy this coast house, but I can't afford it. So I'm going to bring in, you know, these, my friends or whatever. And now, I mean, because interest rates are so high and all of that, I mean, you got to think outside the box. So the phone call was, you know, hey, we were at the coast. We loved this house. You know, we did the open house next door and we really want to buy it. But Joe and I, let's just call him Joe. Joe and I can't afford it on our own.
Right.
So we have another set of friends that were actually with us and we just were brainstorming over the wine. That's how it all starts, right? It's the wine, the beer, the vodka, whatever it is. And we, you know, decided, hey, we want to buy this house. And they said, oh, we'll call Ashley and see. Okay. Yeah. So I said, absolutely. You know, the thing there's a couple of things, you know, you've got to talk to a lender, right? And we always say we are not lenders. We're not attorneys. So basically everything we tell you is just the stuff we see on a day-to-day basis. Yeah. It's not legal advice or financial advice, but those are things that you have to work out prior to purchasing, you know, a $750,000 house, half and half.
Well,
right?
And legally, just to be fair, you know, it's kind of like a prenup. You really, really want to have some stuff set in place because y'all want to stay friends.
Right, exactly. You know, and do you want, you know, do you want it to be just the two husbands purchasing it, the two wives, all four of y'all? I mean, there are questions to be asked and there are tax things that you need to ask. You know, how are we going to write this interest off? How are we, you know, those kind of things.
If it's income producing, how is that profit or...
Right. And that's a whole nother thing. I mean, you know, in the conversations that we were having, they were not going to Airbnb. They were not going to VBRO. They were not going to rent it out. They were just going to enjoy it themselves, which is great.
Yes.
But the fact that it is, you know, that would be an option. Those are things definitely to have conversations about. So basically, you know, what I said was you need to find you a lender that has the capability to do this.
Yes.
You need to talk to your tax, you know, financial advisors, because you need to make sure that you understand how this is going to affect taxes and what you can and can't write off, if you can write any of it off, all of those kind of things.
Right.
But most importantly, it was, you know, about finding a lender, you know, and everybody getting qualified and all of that.
And we see a lot of times people, you know, maybe they've got some friends that they vacation with all the time. And so proactively, they create an LLC or a trust of some sort, or however they want to set all that up, because that helps take care of some of those questions as well. Because
absolutely,
everything will funnel through that LLC. Obviously, everybody's partners, kind of on the hook, responsibility-wise. But it streamlines some of those lending things, because you're just lending the one entity, you've got your partnership docs, all of that. It gets, again, it can get a little complicated, or it can be pretty straightforward.
Right.
But that's why it's imperative to talk to a financial planner and And a lot of lenders, and this in those certain circumstances, your local lender is going to be the person that's going to be able to help you the most.
Absolutely.
Some of the big box lenders, it's just kind of out of their wheelhouse because it doesn't fit into a form.
Right.
And so that's where you might pay a tiny bit more in interest, or, you know, you might be a little bit limited to the different types of loans, but a local lender is going to be invaluable in those certain circumstances.
Absolutely. Anytime you're doing, you know, thinking outside the box.
Yes.
It behooves you.
Yes.
But on the same note, you know, we also, like you said, have been seeing multifamily units and that kind of thing. And so I want to kind of touch on, you know, the different options there, right? So myself and my husband are going to buy a multifamily unit, okay? One or two units, we're going to live in one and we're going to rent one out. Yeah. That seems to be, you know, a big deal. And I think we were talking earlier about the fact that you even have some properties that are like this.
Yes.
I think there are fourplexes.
Yeah, there are fourplexes. We have a fourplex community here in town. There's a term called house hacking. Everybody's excited about house hacking and how renting one side of a duplex, theoretically, you think it's going to pay your mortgage, but it doesn't always work that way.
Is that not the story of life right there?
Yeah.
You think
it's going to work that way. But there are folks who are able, especially in the fourplex scenario, right, because you've got the rent of three units while you live in one. And that does cover the mortgage.
Yeah. And so also I have seen where, you know, two couples have bought like a four or a sixplex, and then they each live in one and they rent out the other two or four, depending on how many plexes it has, I guess. Is that the right word?
Well, and the interesting thing is that, for example, one of my clients, they purchased the fourplex, but because it was their primary residence, they were able to take the homestead exemption.
Oh,
which helped
out
tremendously in taxes.
Yeah.
Because it's one to four family. Once
yeah.
you get beyond four, things change just a wee bit.
We're going to talk about those exemptions in a little while. So
yeah.
we'll come back to that, because that seems to be, I get lots of questions on that. Okay, so we talked about more than one family buying a vacation home. Here's the other thing that I'm kind of stupefied over, but I had the conference that I went to, that's Texas Land Title Association, one of the classes that I took, they talked a lot about co-ownership of not a multi-unit, but like, let's say two divorced women.
Oh.
Okay. So they buy a house and they raise their children together, you know, in this house or whatever, and how that looks, and how that is not something that previously has really happened a lot, but because of the marketplace and because of how things are working out, that they are seeing, you know, people come up with other solutions. And I mean, I thought that was a great idea. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but like on Facebook, you know, the moms group, every once in a while I'll see somebody say, you know, hey, single, you know, female with two kids looking, you know, for some place to rent or someplace, you know, whatever. And when they started talking about that, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And in those cases, I think it's really important when you're, you know, when you start looking for that property, if it's if the people are going in together to buy a brand new property versus I have this house that I can't afford, you want to rent a room.
Right.
Again, putting everything in the deed, making sure what happens if one person sadly were to pass away, what happens, you know, what happens with a multitude of things? How do we take tax breaks? To be honest with you, I'm saying this out loud because I don't know. If both women own the property, can they still get a homestead exemption because they're not married?
Yes.
Perfect. Do they just split it?
No. Well, so see, they're not going to be filing their taxes together.
No.
Ooh, this is a good question for the tax people. But it would be, I mean, they could still file homestead and they would get the valuation off of the school taxes. But
because you'd have to have one mortgage. You can't have two mortgages on one property. So they would have to both be on the mortgage.
Right. But I'm thinking we're talking apples and oranges.
Maybe.
So the portion about getting the exemption for the homestead, that is something they would benefit from, because when they get their tax bill, it is going to be, the value will be based on a homestead exemption on the property.
Okay.
But then the whole mortgage thing, it kind of goes back to if you've got two families who've purchased, you know, those are conversations you have to have with your tax consultant, because how are we going to write this off? Are we going to do it 50-50? How are we going to, you know, show all of this? Because ultimately, you know, it gets reported and then it's up to you, you know, or your tax people to figure it out on your taxes. So,
and I think most, I see this sometimes with, when you have a parents have passed away and the children don't want to lose the house, so they go in and purchase the house together, mm-hmm. when one wants to sell and one doesn't, and how you navigate the unraveling of some of that is mm-hmm. when it gets a little bit sticky, because you can't just sell half a house. You have to figure some of that out. So, I think property taxes and interest rates and all that kind of stuff is what's giving people a whole lot of angst these days.
So it's funny that you kind of touched on this, because this was not really something that I thought about talking about, but it is something that I have seen quite a bit lately. So thank you for bringing it up.
My pleasure.
Okay, perfect. All right. So back to parents have passed.
Yeah.
And now we have got a property that is, you know, let's just say it's Joe Blow, and we know he's deceased, right?
Yeah.
Joe had three children. He had a will that has not been probated, and in that will, he says his three children get this property. Okay. So now we've got two options, right? We can either probate the will or we can do affidavits of heirship. I know we've talked about all of this.
Right.
So let's just, for ease of conversation, let's say that we do the affidavit of heirship route. So we have two disinterested parties who, you know, confirm he only had three children, blah, blah, blah. We attach the will, we record it.
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden, when we run title on this property, the property title vested is going to be in the three kids.
Yes.
Okay. So now here's where let the fighting commence, right? So we've got three kids, right? I mean, it just always seems like that. Not every time, but I would say out of every 10 family transactions, 9 of them, I think I'm going to have to call the police. I mean,
and
legit.
Two kids, and there's three kids versus two.
Yes. Okay. So in this scenario that we've got going, let's say that we've got two kids that want to sell and one that doesn't. Mm-hmm. So the one that doesn't always has the option to buy the other children out.
Yeah.
So let's talk about kind of what that scenario looks like, because I've actually done it a couple of times in the last couple of months.
Yeah.
So we get a contract, right? And it says, what are we going to name the children? A, B, and C.
There you go.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So their names are A, B, and C. Their parents were very creative. All right. So A wants to not sell the property, uh-huh. and she has plenty of money. And she says, you know what? I want to buy this. So I'm going to buy your interest out. So now at this point, you got to figure out what is this property worth, right? So there's a couple of options there. In one of the scenarios, they actually paid an appraiser who went and did an appraisal. And that's what they used as the sales price.
Yeah.
One of the other ones said, you know what? Let's just use the appraised value that the appraisal district has. Okay, so they used that, all right? So in both cases, it was established, okay, this is what we're going to use as our sales price. So then we get an earnest money contract, and the earnest money contract says the sellers are A, B, and C, right?
Oh, two.
And A. Yeah, and A is the purchaser.
Oh.
Because A has an interest in this property already, so A has to sign the affidavit as to debts and liens saying that there are no other properties. You know, that kind of stuff, right? So you're going to see them, you know, all as sellers. Now, on the other contract, it only had B and C selling to A, which, you know, I don't police the earnest money contract, so we kind of went with it. We just explained that, A, you still have to sign our insuring forms as a seller,
right?
Because we have to make sure that when we're insuring this to you, yourself, right, that you don't know that there's a lien out there or, you know, those kind of things.
Right.
So then where it gets a little bit, not weird, but you know, where people have sometimes a hard time thinking through the process. So we're going to have a closing statement, right? And it's going to have B and C are going to, well, in one of the cases, we had A, B, and C, right?
Yes.
And we took it all the way down because they are all responsible for a portion of the fees that are associated with it, right? And then we just divided the proceeds a third, and a third.
Yeah.
And then the buyer, we gave a credit for her proceeds onto her purchase side. So it was less money she had to bring to us.
Perfect.
So, I mean, there are ways, you know, to do this. Yes. And then, you know, on the other one, they had, CPA, and he kind of said, okay, this is how I want it done because I'm the one that's going to do everybody's taxes.
Let me make it easy on myself.
Exactly. And you know what? We love that. Yes. You know, if you've got somebody ahead of time, then that means everybody knows exactly what's going to happen and there aren't any surprises. Now, is that true? Again, probably not. There's always surprises.
This is real estate. There's a surprise in every transaction.
Exactly. Yes. But in general, right. You know, if they've got, you know, a CPA and they've got their own attorney, then yeah. I mean, it just kind of flows through. But that's just food for thought. You know, if you are the child that doesn't want to sell, or you're the child that does, and you've got one sibling that doesn't,
yes.
you can always say, okay, you know what? You buy us out.
Yeah.
And we know how to do that. And it's, you know, fairly seamless. It's much easier if the sibling that's purchasing has cash and they just buy it.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that we have done it where there was a lender involved. Mm-hmm. So that you can also do. So there's multiple options. It's just, again, like we talk about every time, I feel like it's knowing what questions to ask right. and who to ask those questions.
Yes. And again, too, I think it's also important to note that find someone local, somebody you can walk into their office, somebody who will pick up their phone. So many times my clients just get lost in the telephone shuffle with the big, and I have nothing against the big box lenders because sometimes they're the right choice for whatever transaction right. we're doing. But in the beginning, it's always nice to have somebody that you can talk to. It's lovely that people can pick up the phone and call you and ask questions because right. we don't know.
Yeah. And again, I mean, it you don't know what you don't know.
No.
I mean,
and this even as an agent, honestly, there are things that come across my desk that I may have never seen before. And in an effort to be of the best service possible, I'm going to ask a lot of questions because yeah. the last thing you want is to provide advice that not necessarily bad, but just present all the options.
Right.
Like you were saying, it made me think of something back with the multifamily. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more multifamily, but when we get to those sorts of transactions, I constantly think about how people are putting fail safes in place when it comes to their children inheriting property and how do they handle those sorts of things for tax purposes? Because that can get pretty sticky, especially if you've got a property that's four units or more,
mm-hmm.
Because it becomes commercial.
Yeah.
And that's kind of tough. So that would definitely be a little bit more complicated of a scenario. Say you have, you know, three siblings and they want to sell the property.
Well, the good thing is that generally commercial, not always, but generally it's held in an entity.
Yes.
And, you know, it, more often than not, there is more than one player in that entity.
Yes.
So if someone, you know, one of them passes, you know, there's still somebody that can handle, you know, the transactions and whatnot.
Well, and that's where too, that some of those deed options come in.
Right.
People, I mean, these are terms that honestly, it'll make your eyes glass over because it's slightly boring, but you've got tenancy in common where you've got multiple buyers, not necessarily a husband and wife.
Mm-hmm.
They all have equal rights to the property. They may not have an equal
share
investment into mm-hmm. the property. But say somebody passes away, their interest can go to an heir. But if you've got a tenancy with the right of survivorship, if somebody passes away, the rest of the owners receive that portion of theirs.
See, I just don't know enough about this because, you know, in Texas, we don't, not that we can't have it, but it's always, you know, when I get those questions, I'm like, oh, let me call the attorney.
Well, and usually those are things that are worked out with an attorney
yes.
ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And so as an agent, we're mostly just making sure that, you know, names are correct on contracts and we're asking for, you know,
the right things.
Mm-hmm. But ever so often we get these questions,
yeah.
Hey, is it best to do this or is it best to do that? I mean, Texas is a common property state. So when you're married and you buy a property, you both own 100%. But recently I've had it where a spouse, one of the spouse's parents died and she got the inheritance. Well, that's not common property.
Right.
She keeps that all by herself. Or people got very confused because they each had a home and then they got married, but they had those homes prior to the
right.
marriage.
Yeah.
And so that gets a little bit
confusing.
Well, I think it's just confusing because you're like, but it's ours now.
Right.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Not technically. And I think when it comes to the multifamily stuff, a lot of people are just putting everything in writing ahead of time.
I think that's, you know what? That is the answer to 99% of the questions. Put it in writing, have an agreement, work all this stuff out before you jump into it.
Well, and think about the couple that's at the coast and they're so excited because they're hopped up on beer and wine from a day on the sun and they're like, we're buying a house together. And then it's really, really easy to get caught up in the excitement of having a property and not taking a step back and saying, okay, we need to put some stuff, put it in writing. It helps a friendship and it certainly helps a family. I mean,
absolutely.
Not everybody thinks the same way or wants the same things. So
exactly.
It may be a little awkward in the beginning. I always think of it like a prenup.
There you go.
It's not really fun in the beginning.
But it sure saves a lot of heartache at the end.
I've heard a lot of people say it really helps.
Yeah, right?
Oh my goodness. I think it's, I know this isn't the super most fun topic, but I think, you know, with so many people out there looking for creative ways to buy the properties that they want now that the market is the way it is, interest rates probably aren't going to be coming down. Mm-hmm. That's not the word on the street.
Right.
And so people, like you said, they're just finding ways to get what they want.
I think we've talked about this in previous podcasts about, you know, parents having a home and selling it to their daughter or their son. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, them, all sorts of creative things are happening. But another one that I have done, like three of lately, and I think I've probably mentioned them, is where someone has passed and then now it's the grandparents' house. Mm-hmm. Right. So the grandparents have passed, which means generally it goes to the kids.
Yeah.
And the kids are then selling it to their children.
Mm.
And so I've actually done several of those lately. And mm-hmm. so that goes back. It looks similar to what we just talked about where, you know, child A is buying out B and C because inevitably there's not just one child. Well, you know what? I did do one where there was just one child and then she sold it to her only child. So that was easy. But in general,
we love those.
Right? It happens so very rarely. I almost forgot about it. It's the hard ones you remember always.
Yes.
But generally you've got more than one sibling and we've got to figure out their interests to convey it over to, you know, whichever of the kids' children is going to end up with it.
Well, and I think too, sometimes this process takes a little bit of time and that's where people start to, it gets bad.
And they
sideways.
Get frustrated.
Yeah. Cause it takes a long time to work through these things. And, because we're all here to do it right.
Right.
And make sure that title's conveyed in the proper way. Because once somebody's ready to buy, they're ready to buy.
Right.
Let's get it done.
And again, if you've got a lender involved, I mean, it's just going to take longer and that's just the way that it goes. And we all understand that. But if, you know, the kids don't understand it, not the grandkid, you know, but the A, B, and C children, if they don't understand that this is not going to be a 5-minute process, then they do. They're like, well, somebody's not telling me the truth or somebody's not, okay, gosh, no, that's not what's happening. Yes. You know, it's
and
just
And I think a lot
time.
Of times we joke that in our industry, we're therapists, counselors, and mediators.
We're all of the things.
Well, and that's okay because sometimes it's easier to yell at Ashley than it is your sister.
Exactly. And you know, sometimes it's, you know, sister saying, hey, I'm gonna have my sister call you because she doesn't believe a word I say. I wish I had a dollar.
But I've used it. I'm like, I'm so sorry you don't believe me. I'm gonna let you talk to Ashley.
She's gonna go right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the time I have people say, well, now I think I understand that, but if they question me and I don't know, I'm just going to tell them to call you. I'm like, okay, perfect. Tell them to call me.
Tell you how many times I have a super confident in my answer, and then all of a sudden someone poses it again in a different way. I'm like, dadgum. I don't know. Call it Ashley.
You know, sometimes I'm like, I don't know either. You know, I've had one that has kind of been ongoing and You know, there are certain rules. We've talked about this. There are rules that we all abide by for affidavits of heirship, for probate, right? And, you know, they questioned me and they questioned me and they questioned me. And I was adamant because I am literally 99.9999% sure, right? But after about the fifth time, I'm like, what if something has changed? What if, I mean, because you know as well as I know, the name of this game is let's all learn it and then let's shuffle it up and do it different.
Yes,
that happens differently. So I did. I had our examiner email every single one of our underwriters, and I said, "Here's the scenario.
Yeah,
you tell me if there is anything new. Has anything changed?" And every one of them came back and said, "No, nothing has changed."
Yeah,
but you know, every once in a while, I do, you know, need to check and make sure, and you know, because sometimes it's rote. I just, you know, you ask me a question, and I just tell you the same answer that I've been telling this people for 25 years.
Right,
and sometimes it. I'm not doing a justice to the question if I sometimes don't check my answer and be like, okay, has anything changed?
Well, and a lot of times too, I find myself something will come across my desk that I haven't seen in 6 or 7 years, and then I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, because if you don't deal with something,
yes, and the more complicated the transaction, I definitely. Like to take my time and make sure that
absolutely
my answer is correct.
Absolutely. And but I teach a class on affidavits of heirship and divorce and who has the authority to sign. So I mean I can give CE hours, right?
Yes.
So I mean I teach this class. I feel so confident in my answer. So that fifth
all it
time
takes
when
is child A to come in.
So after I am so adamant, I'm like, holy smokes, here I've been teaching this class. What if I'm doing it wrong? You know, so that's when I was like, hey, you know, can you just make sure there's not something that has changed and whatever? But
well, and I guess, too, that raises a point that makes me think. So real estate, it's not black and white.
No.
And the fact that people can own property 6 ways from Sunday to make it what they want it to be for their particular scenario is what keeps this interesting.
Right.
And if somebody's out there and they're thinking, oh my gosh, those interest rates, they're keeping me out of the market, or I can't do this and I can't do that, there might be a way to get it done.
Absolutely.
Reach out. Give us a call. Find us on Facebook. There might be a way to get it done. You talk about grandma and grandpa's house and whatnot. You know, I'm seeing it more and more where people want to gift their children inheritance prior to their death. Because they want to see.
Yes.
They want to see what it does to their life.
Right.
And I'm starting to see conversations of, okay, my grandparents want to give me the house before. How do I buy it so that they can then go live in assisted living or wherever it is they want to be?
Right.
And
so, you know, how many times do I say I'm not a lender? But having just closed several of these transactions, exactly like what you're talking about, you know, where the grandkids want to buy the grandparents' house or the parents' house or whatever. It used to be that when you had a lender, it was big time arm's length transaction, right? That was a big deal. Like they wanted to make sure you were not purchasing this from family. They wanted to make sure, you know, that nobody was related in the transaction and all of that. And that just does not seem to be the case anymore.
No.
I mean, like literally yesterday I closed one that had a box lender. And it was the parents selling, and it was one of their rent houses. So it was not, of course, their homestead, but it was just a rent house.
Right.
And they actually owned it in an LLC, but they disclosed the fact in the contract, you know, that we're selling this, that the buyers are our daughter and son-in-law.
Yeah. Yeah. And nobody, and it's fine.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly what mentality has changed there or how it all happened.
Common sense may have prevailed in that instance. Well,
we need to take a moment.
I know.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting. And it's like us, you know, like we've talked about multiple times about figuring out a way.
Yeah.
That's what's happening is that they're figuring out a way.
Yes.
And the lenders are, you know, I guess on board with it because.
Well, I saw something this week that I hadn't seen. Not that it's not done, it's advertised a little bit differently about assumable loans and things like that, the VA assumable, but it was VA assumable or non-VA assumable. And I don't have any specifics, but I think that that's something that people don't explore enough is my loan assumable, it's not the most fun way to go about things.
I wish that y'all had television and could see the look on my face
because I want to cry. I'm going to take a picture and post it on Facebook. But, you know, people are moving constantly.
Yeah.
Grandma and grandpa moved 10 years ago. They still have a mortgage.
Right.
But their interest rate is so low. Can I assume this? How can we do this so that I can get into this house and then they can go where they need to go?
So I wish that I could tell you when the last time assuming a loan was the thing. In my years here, there was a time where we did assumptions, a handful of them.
Uh-huh.
This year I have done 4 already and I have 2 more in the pipeline of exactly what you're saying. And when you say VA assumable and non-VA assumable, really what that means is, and again, I'm not a lender, what that means is if you have a VA loan.
See, and I got it, but I thought you could, if it was a VA assumable, another veteran is the only person that could buy it.
But there are instances where it is VA assumable, non-VA buyer.
Yeah.
But that's...
I hadn't seen it presented in that way.
Well, so I also had one. It came in. The contract said that it was an assumption, blah, blah, blah. And it was a box lender. And I was like, well, this is going to be a...
nightmare.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly what it was going to be. And so I thought we're going to get all the way to the end. And then, you know, this box lender is going to say, ha, joke's on you. This is not really assumable.
Thank you for wasting your time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And crazily enough, I had closed the people when they purchased it.
Uh-huh.
So I went back and I looked through all of those loan documents and I could not find out. I could not find anywhere where it said that it was assumable. So I really thought, you know, we were going to get to a week before closing and that. But long story short, they closed it. They did an assumable loan. There are questions that you have to ask to make sure that you know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you are the one that is assuming the loan, are they releasing the people, the previous owners? Right. Are they releasing it? Are they keeping it so that if you were to get foreclosed on, they can take it back? I mean, it gets very complicated and convoluted, and there's lots of questions. So you need to make sure that you've got somebody that knows what they're doing, you know, that maybe you have an attorney review it or, you know, those kind of things. Because you don't want to leave yourself hanging out there high and dry. But I guess the point to this is that assumable loans, if they are out there, there are people that are willing to assume them. And we're starting to see a resurgence of it.
Think about it. It's the nature of how our market shifts and adjusts.
Yes.
Because lenders have to make money as well, period.
Right.
And so they sometimes are willing to pave a pathway for people to purchase a house that they really need, allow a seller to sell a house that they really need to sell at a much more advantageous interest rate than what's being done now. And it's certainly, it's maybe a little bit more work, but it's certainly better than a foreclosure.
Yeah.
For a seller to say, I can't get this house, so I've got to move. I'm sorry. I'm willing to just let it go.
Yeah.
I think we will start to see a little bit more of that. And I hope that people start to maybe ask those questions of their lenders. But is this an assumable loan? Because 2022, 2023.
Right. The thing is that more often than not, they are not.
Well, correct.
Way more often than not. I mean, because it just kind of went, I don't want to say it was a fad, but it went out of style, right? Nobody asked, hey, can you make this assumable?
Right, right.
I mean, in the heyday when you've got 2% interest rates or whatever, you know, who thinks ahead?
We should have.
I know who should have thought ahead. Maybe not who did, but who should have.
So it's 2020.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Anyway, it's actually a really great thing for people just to educate themselves on. Because if you are considering selling your house, you have anything less than 4%.
Yeah. I mean, it's worth a phone call to your lender. Call and say, hey, is my loan assumable?
And if it's not, can I make it assumable?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know how that works after the fact. It may not actually even be possible.
I don't know.
I said that without ever even having had that thought before.
But that's okay. You don't know unless you ask.
It's totally true. This is half of our conversations. Y'all would laugh at our lunches.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's something that maybe you will start seeing this all the time.
Actually. I know. Great. Like I said, I've closed several and I've got a couple more in the pipeline.
Yeah.
So I know, I mean, and really and truly, they're not that complicated. It's just a lot of pieces.
And it's a little bit more time. You have to plan for a little bit more time in a transaction.
Yeah. And your closing statement looks a little bit different. I mean, there's just some things.
Yes.
It's
imperative to have an agent. Yeah. To help you walk through some of this process, because contracts can be so confusing.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And if we don't know the answer, we know who to ask. Awesome.
Okay. So the only other thing that I kind of want to touch on are exemptions. I said we would come back and kind of talk about that.
Yes, you did. You did.
And maybe this needs to be a whole episode where we talk about exemptions and rollbacks and all of that kind of stuff. But I have had several closings lately. Mm-hmm. So when we get ready to do a closing, right, the first thing we pull is the tax information sheet mm-hmm. so that we can see, you know, make sure that our seller owns the property, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
No one wants to right. sell the wrong property.
That's exactly right. We're just trying to match up everything. And, you know, if there are taxes that are due, we have to collect those. That's one of the things that we say that we're insuring, you know, that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I have come across several files where the current owners live in the house and do not have their homestead exemption on there.
I'm seeing that a lot as well.
And, you know, it used to be that it saved you, you know, several hundred dollars or whatever back when it was $20,000 off the valuation of the school. But now with the new law, it's $100,000 valuation off of the school taxes. And it makes a difference. Yes, just a shout out to everybody out there. If you do not know if you have a homestead on your property, go look. Yeah. It's KendallCounty.org. It says property search. You click the button and it says
KendallCad.org.
KendallCad. Yeah, sorry. Thank you.
Okay.
Kindle. So it's KindleCAD.org. Mm-hmm. That is the website. And when you go on there, you can hit property search mm-hmm. and then you can do it by address, by last name.
Yes.
All the things. Just look and it will tell you if you have a homestead on there.
Yes.
Now, for every rule, there's exceptions. It used to be that it showed you all the exemptions. It does not do that anymore because of privacy. So you have to look at your valuations and it will say Kendall County valuation, 500,000, City of Bernie, 500,000, Bernie ISD, 400,000 because it's $100,000 off of whatever your total valuation is.
Yeah.
That's how you will know. And I know that sounds confusing. You know what? If you hear this and you're like, I have no idea what she's talking about, call me. I'll pull it up and I'll look for you. I'm not kidding.
Well, and I think that's, I mean, I know we've mentioned this as well, is that your tax records are public information. So it's something that's very easy to take a look at.
Yes.
Make sure the information that you think you have actually matches the records.
Right.
And the new homestead laws are definitely more advantageous for all of us, but it's true. I can't tell you how many times I work with a client and ask them, is there a reason you're not filing for a homestead exemption? And they don't even know what I'm talking about sometimes, right. Or they don't even know that it's not.
Right. And it used to be that you could not file for your homestead exemption until January 1st of the year after you purchased, right? So let's say that you purchased in June. Well, then you had to wait until January 1 of the following year to file your homestead. That changed.
Yes.
And now upon purchase, you can file that. So I do get where people forgot
to
do it.
Yes.
But now you can do it immediately.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I tell people in every closing, don't forget to file your homestead exemption.
Right. The appraisal district will be cursing us.
Oh yeah, tomorrow. Probably.
But this is, it's your right to it's your benefit for owning property.
Absolutely. So and now it does make a big difference. So, you know, it's one of those things that it's easy to do and it saves you, you know, a chunk of change.
Yeah.
So
grocery money.
I'm telling you right now, we need it.
If you only have one child.
Okay. So let's tell them one more time where they can hear us.
You can find us at Reggae Rocks, Kendall County. And we are the first Saturday of every month from 9 to 10 a.m. Like Ashley said in the beginning, if you've missed an episode and you want to go back and hear it, or if some of these podcasts are a little meaty, so if you want to go back and review something that we've said, there is a podcast section on the app for Reggae Rocks Kendall County. You can find all of our podcasts there.
Yep. And you can contact us on Facebook.
Facebook, it's at the Closing Table. And then everywhere else, it's at Closing Table. So at Closing Table on Instagram, at Closing Table at gmail.com. If you want to send us an email, feel free. If there's something you want us to cover, something you have a question about, Yeah, feel free to let us know. I think we're going to maybe start having guests, some lenders and some other people within the industry to continue providing you guys with some good information.
Okay.
Awesome.
Well, sure was good to chat with you.
Yes,
as always, and we'll catch you next month.
All right. Bye.